This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher's Keys. Hello, hello, hello. This is the Out of Bounds podcast. My name is Adam Jabber, and today we have an excellent episode for you guys with one of my favorite skiers to watch, Todd Laguerre. Todd and I talk about all kinds of things, his career to this point, a couple segments in particular that he's had, or a couple videos in particular, and all kinds of other stuff. So if you are a ski purist, and you'd like to hear episodes mostly about just skiing and shredding and places to go skiing and that kind of thing, this is definitely an episode for you. And I would highly recommend you go back and listen to 136 with Jackie Peso if you haven't as well, because that is also one of those episodes. Not to say that they're not deeper, but they're, if you nerd out on ski life and what skiing, like, these are the kinds of episodes for you. So yeah, Todd and I chatted, and yesterday was his birthday too, so if you get the opportunity to and you're listening to this around when it comes out, which is Tuesday, January 12th is when this is going to come out, tell Todd happy birthday, or happy belated, because you people missed it, so go tell him. Before we jump into the episode, I just want to say a quick thank you to our sponsor for the show, and for this episode in particular, Fisher Skis. As you know, I am a big fan of Fisher stuff. I like them a lot. They make all kinds of things that I really enjoy, including the new Ranger line. You've heard me talk about Pink Ski Gang and like all kinds of other, Pink Ski, Ranger 102, Ranger series oriented things. I really do think it's one of the best all around products that's out there. If I've told people this time and time again, if I don't know what conditions are going to be like, I grab Ranger 102s. If there's a chance it could be fun, if I don't know who I'm skiing with, if they're like, oh, they want to maybe hang out in the park, but oh, also maybe they want to go rip groomer, like, that ski does it all, and you'll be pleased with the performance of it, I think. So you can check out that ski and more at www.fishersports.us. Fishersports.com. I keep saying Fishersports.us because I think that used to be the old site. But anyway, it's Fishersports.com. So get on that, check out some Rangers, become part of the Pink Ski Gang, and we'll talk to you guys soon again about some more stuff I want to tell you, but I can't tell you yet. Anyway. If you have the opportunity, leave a review on iTunes. It helps the show a ton. I love to read them. It's a good ego boost, if nothing else, for the days when you're like, oh, why am I sitting at 5:18 a.m. on a Tuesday recording episode intros before I go skiing? It's nice to read those kind of things. So leave a review if you can. I would highly encourage you to go back and listen to one of the other episodes recently, because I actually think lately they've been, for me, they've been some of the most fun episodes. 136 with Jackie, 135 with Dell, 134 with Ian Hamilton. That was like before we took a little break. There's so many good ones. Oh, and Katie Brails came out 133. So go listen to those if you haven't yet. That's basically all I'm going to talk your ear off about for now. Without further ado, here's Todd Laguerre. Cool. All right. Well, Todd, yeah. Tell people who you are, tell them a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. I'm Todd Laguerre. I'm from Park City, Utah. I'm a professional big mountain free skier. And now I kind of split my time between Tahoe and Salt Lake. And of course, wherever I can go to find the good snow.
What has that part been like? Like going back and forth with, like, are there travel restrictions between California and Utah at all? Like, I have no idea what's going on anywhere anymore.
Yeah. I understand that. It's a bit confusing at the moment. No, I think for us, it's just been trying to keep our bubbles small so we don't feel like we're putting anybody at risk, you know, as we do kind of go back and forth. We have roommates in both places, so
right,
they're obviously part of our bubble. But yeah, I mean, mostly, and then most of the things we've been doing in those places has just been, you know, since the season started, just on the hill and everything, which I think is thankfully one of the more safe environments we have going right now. So
yeah, it seems like that's gone rather, I mean, knock on wood, but it seems like that's gone well so far this year. Like, how has it been in those places? Like, has everybody been managing it well? Have the resorts been managing it well?
I've been really impressed overall with how it's been functioning. I mean, I would be, you know, a little bit full of it if I didn't admit to, like, I think the lift lines and stuff were a bit longer just because of, you know, you're not fully loading all the lifts and things like that. But I feel like that's also just a small complaint. Just
right.
I'm just trying to remind myself to be grateful that, you know, that they're operating at all. Cause you know, in Europe, I think it was all down to Switzerland maybe until just recently that was kind of like allowing skiing really at all. And so, at least we've had the opportunity to go, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's good to hear that coming from someone other than, like, I don't know, the resorts, because it seems like everybody's kind of taking it for, like, kind of taking it for granted, because a few months ago, we weren't even sure that this was going to be a thing. And now, like, lift lines are kind of a small price to pay, I think, for, you know, for what we're dealing with. What's been home hill for you mostly?
Well, I still claim Alta and Snowbird for sure are kind of my two out in Salt Lake. But I have out here mostly Squaw. Like today we were at Alpine. But and the other thing about that's been kind of nice about being in California, I think it's the snowmobile access is a little easier than it is in Utah. So I've been able to get out and snowmobile quite a bit already, which has been nice.
Yeah, that's actually what my next question was going to be for you is, like, what have you been skiing mostly? Like, have you been getting on the snowmobile a lot? Have you been touring a lot? Like, what's your go-to these days? And obviously it's weather dependent, but.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's been a good mix. I mean, we're, you know, again, compared to some places, I don't know how it is back there for you, but it is a thinner start, which I've been really spoiled because, like, the last few seasons I spent a good chunk of December up in BC and was basically skiing pillows and hitting cliffs and stuff kind of right off the bat. So this year has required a lot more patience as far as that goes. You know, I've just been kind of doing one day at the hill, maybe one day a small tour, the next day go out on the sleds. And it's been a good mix, but for sure it's required patience. I mean, I'm spoiled, you know, I get that, but I know it's really good up in BC right now, and it looks like Japan, all these places we would be kind of considering right now, you know? Yeah.
It's the only place that seems like it's good right now, and it's like the place that everybody can't go. Like, it's been dog shit out here, like, pretty much. I mean, I cannot tell you how many core shots I got skiing today, like, and that trend, I think, is going to continue for the next couple of weeks, unfortunately, but...
Right. It is. The ski tuners, I think, they're having a big year.
Yeah, everybody's crushing in the shops right now. Yeah. But it's a good thing. But, I mean, I think you're kind of, if anybody's allowed to be kind of, like, complainy and, like, spoiled about the conditions, it's you, because this is your job to, like, go ski good shit and put out content, kind of.
Right. No, that's true, you know. And I think over the years, I've been out long enough to recognize that you have to be patient sometimes. I mean, you can't really force all of that, but it's also important to be, if you're not really shooting and stuff, just to be warming up and gaining confidence and stuff. So when those things do align, you're prepared, you know? So, and I, you know, certainly you can do a good deal of that, I think, in any conditions really, but it's still, obviously it's nice to be able to push yourself early in the season if you can, you know?
Yeah. How, if at all, did having a quarantine period over the summer and, like, all kinds of uncertainty, did that, like, affect the way that you trained at all for the ski season? Or I guess some people don't train at all. Like, do you train? I guess that's the first question to ask.
Historically I've done, very much. I mean, I grew up ski racing, so I think, you know, there's just a lot of, leftover discipline or patterns or things I'd do that were kind of similar to that stuff. Surely I spend way less time in the gym than I used to, but so yeah, I like do a lot of trail running and mountain biking. My main rule of thumb is if there's something that I can double as recreation and training, I always choose that first. That's kind of like a sort of real rule I have for myself. But, this is the first time forever really that, the gym was just out. I just wasn't going there at all. Trying to do something to substitute that with body weight stuff and things that were strength related, but it's a little bit of an experiment to some degree for sure this year to see. I think I was in better shape in a lot of ways, but maybe there was a strength element that I'm rolling into this season without, and I don't know. A lot of ways my body tends to appreciate that, so I think there's a possible upside, but I don't really know yet.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of early to tell.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think that like people are going to start to go away from gyms entirely after this? Like I was thinking about this the other day because like for myself, I've been working out at home and I haven't gone back to the gym, even though like the gym's open, but going in and working out in a mask is definitely a deterrent, I think, for a lot of people, and just because it's harder. And it's something you have to be conscious of in addition to, and you're around a whole bunch of other people and you're using the same stuff that's already gross and disgusting normally, never mind in a time when COVID's so rampant. Like, I wonder how those guys are going to do once and if, I guess, we get back to a normal.
Yeah, I've been kind of wondering that too. I think it could go either way because, like, obviously people have created new habits and maybe, like, built out their home gyms and stuff like that. But then I also see that the gym is like a really social thing for some individuals. So like they're probably missing that to some degree.
Right.
And so, I don't know. It will be curious to see. I was wondering the same thing. I don't know that I know the answer to that. Although the gym that I was using out here in Truckee, which Julia Mancuso actually owned,
Really?
just getting the information that they are closing and not like temporarily, they just are closing for good.
Fuck.
So it's hard to see obviously a local business go away. I think no one wants to hear those stories, you know. But I know there's such a huge community wanting that out here that when the time returns, the demand will get something else going in its place, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah, I hope so. I think there's a lot of those types of things that have kind of been pushed off to the side a little bit with all this. And while it kind of seems like a lot of businesses, like ski and bike seems to be thriving because people want to go outside.
Totally.
And same thing with like a lot of anything outdoors, basically, people are like hot to trot on right now. But there's a lot of these things that are getting hit super hard with this.
I know. Maybe that'll be the trend with the gyms, though. If anything's like new construction, it'll be the ones where you can open the whole side and there'll be, you know, indoor, outdoor. Or if you've ever been to like Venice Beach in California where they actually have legitimate like weight setups like outdoors, you know.
Right.
I don't know, maybe. I mean, Gagrin, that's pretty weather dependent kind of thing.
I was going to say.
You know, where you are. It doesn't make sense a lot of places. But, you know, I think that's for sure one of the trends we're going to see in restaurants and stuff. Everyone's been investing in these outdoor spaces and everything. And I know a lot of that is going to stay, you know?
Yeah. So how has your goals for the season kind of shifted with all this going on? Like, do you have a plan kind of? Like, you just put out a video part like a little while ago. And I just don't know if that same type of skiing is going to be as easy to access this year. Do you have a plan for this season? Like, have you thought about what that might look like?
For sure. The main thing for me is I always have like things in my head that I would like to do and then just try to be as flexible as possible with it as well. So that, I can adapt when things have changed. I actually have a new video that should be coming out sometime soon here that I was working with Brady Perrin on. But that's all old footage. But anyways, as far as the season goes, just kind of still been in talks with TGR. Hope to shoot with those guys again this year. And they're scrambling a little bit to figure out exactly what to do as well. Because they want to, you know, at least think they really want to do a good job and do it right. So they're think trying to design something where each pod can kind of live on its own without too much people going in and out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that what will happen for a lot of us is we'll just be kind of relegated to one location, you know? So there'll be some people tuning in Wyoming, like there always is there. If it really turns on here in Tahoe, maybe we hope to make it some going on here. For sure, they'll have some guys that are already up in BC shooting up there. And I don't know, my main thing, I'm always thinking about Alaska. So that's the one place we can still go. And yeah. It's stacking, you know, I mean, obviously it's way too early that that's a big deal for what happens in March and April, but I still keep an eye on it and they're getting a lot of snow up there right now. So,
yeah. Is that the spot for you? Like if you had to pick one spot, like all things being equal snow wise, like is Alaska mm-hmm. the place you're picking every time?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's part of it. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that. Obviously the terrain is amazing but I also think it just holds a special place in my head just because that was a lot of like what, you know, I got me into what I'm doing now in the first place. That was always kind of a dream, you know, I was getting on those trips. And it's so big that you can't really begin to tap it out, you know? I mean, even if you go back to one of the same areas multiple times, you're still kind of scratching the surface. So, I mean, that's definitely one of the things in my brain is to, you know, depending on what starts happening with snowpack elsewhere, is going up there for a longer chunk this year and trying to do multiple things, whether that's, you know, hopefully best case scenario, a little bit of fly time, maybe a camping trip, maybe bring the snowmobiles up there. Or so I'm always thinking Alaska.
Yeah. What is it? Just like the sentimental value? Is it the skiing? Like what about it, I guess? Cause like you hear everybody talk about it, and I think everybody's talked about it in every ski movie since the beginning of time too. Like it's like Alaska, mm-hmm. Alaska's the place to go, Alaska. But like right. Why?
I don't know. I think it's like the furthest expansion of the idea of getting like first tracks where, you know, I mean, you take that excitement you have when you got first chair and you just get to ski one of the runs you ski all the time, but you're the first person down it, you know? And then you take that small run and you make it a, you know, what best case scenario, like a 3,000 foot face. And then all of a sudden you punch that out and you get this whole drainage to yourself. So you might be the one person that season to ever lay a track in that drainage or something. And then, or in some cases, you know, certainly first ascents are still happening everywhere up there. So you might be the first person, these first tracks on that mountain ever. I don't know. It's,
yeah,
I think that's the easiest way I can describe it, really, is just, it's just the amount of space. I think that what we really satisfying thing as a skier snowboarder, you know, just being able to just not really have like your tracks dictated by anything in your view, you know, just to have this huge panel to work with. It's just kind of a really cool feeling, I think. So,
yeah, I watched For Good Measure, and when I was watching it, I was like, this is fucking terrifying. Like, do you have these kind of thoughts like in your head? Like the mindset thing, like kind of gets, I don't want to say it gets overplayed and over talked about, but I feel like it's so important that it needs to be talked about, but it, you don't want to talk about it too much where people are like, oh yeah, mindset, whatever, you know, like you don't want people to like brush it off.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, of course, skiing anything big or something consequential, I mean, for sure, there's always going to be some element of fear, like apprehension. But, you know, I think just over time, you just develop different techniques to kind of deal with that. And I think for me, the probably easiest thing to think of is that just to remember that that's like the opportunity that you want, like, or that just being kind of like grateful for that space, like that, what I'm talking about, when you're looking down a huge panel and you're like, okay, well, I got to pay attention to my islands of safety and it might get hectic or something. And you have this game plan, but also just being like, but hey, this is also the run I've been hoping to get all year. And like, you know, take advantage of it, you know, and enjoy it too. So, but yeah, I don't know. It definitely ebbs and flows too. There's times I've been up there where I have felt really confident. There's like less of that, or I've gone on a trip up there before where I didn't really ski anything big or similar in a time frame close to that trip or something, you know, and so it feels a little more foreign. But I mean, I think the best thing to do is, yeah, just be trying to find that kind of feeling or terrain or moments that are kind of going to prep you for that, so that when you get on those trips, you can just take advantage of them, you know?
Yeah. Has it ever gotten to the point for you when you're standing on top of something and you want to, like, and you've actually, like, pulled the plug on it?
I mean, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, where you're like, this just doesn't seem right.
I mean, I can't think of a scenario. I've never been, like, plucked or something once I've, like, been on top of something, but, yeah, there's certainly been moments where, like, I was close to making a decision to, you know, to get on something and decided against it, you know, cause you gotta use your intuition and gut as much as you can up there as well. Right. Because if something doesn't feel right, then it's not a good thing to force. Right. That's for sure putting yourself in a dangerous position, I think. Not that it's your only resource, but it's certainly one of your resources that has to be considered, you know, just how you feel about things, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. And part of the reason I'm asking this is because, like, I leading up to this, I watched a bunch of, like, YouTube videos, like, stemming back, like, for the last, like, 10 years. And one of the ones I watched was the Papa Jordan hit, you, like, kind of, like, land on the first part, and then you're, like, falling down the second part, and then somehow you end up on your feet. Like, I watched it, and I'm still, like, and I've seen it before, and I'm still just like, what the fuck? How did you, like,
That's actually a good one to bring up in this conversation, because that one, I was scared going to that one for sure. I remember because I had been kind of seeing, we'd, you know, sledded past that thing a couple times, and so I'd seen it a couple times on that trip, and I had kind of gotten in my head that I was going to do it. And so I remember the night before that, where I was like going to bed and like thinking about it. And thankfully, usually I'm like really good about just kind of separating that kind of thing. Like, okay, I know I might be, you know, have to deal with some nervousness or something, but I'll just deal with that at the time when it arrives. Like, it's not going to bring me any value to be like stewing on this, like the day ahead of time or whatever, you know, and I'm pretty good at that. But I remember on that one, I was like kind of thinking about it like the evening before, and it was kind of like, it was like a whole day of some degree of anxiety going into it. But the main thing is that I really wasn't that worried about the second stage of that air. It was really more like knowing that it was going to be really bad if I didn't stick that first air. So it's kind of funny, because in my head I was really just focused on sticking that first air, and then it goes so quick after that. But, you know, because it's hard to tell, but that feature, if I were to fall off that first stage, I would have been kind of going skiers left, and there's a huge kind of more sheer cliff with a very flat like dish below it. So although I probably would have gotten spit through it, it would have been much more consequential had I gone that way. So in a weird way, although, you know, obviously I would love to have just greased that and stuck the second air too, but it went kind of close to according to plan, believe it or not.
How have you gone back to it? It's funny that you remember it this clearly. Like, how many times have you watched visual. It?
Well, I've seen it a few times, but I do remember that visual that you can kind of see in the POV where when I was starting to get kind of looped and I was upside down, but I was looking at the rock. It was really weird. I didn't really feel that nervous in the air, because I could see that, like, even though I was going to, like, I mean, I barely like maybe tapped it with my back, and I had like my shovel blade in there. I didn't even really feel that, but I could see that I was traveling at the angle of the cliff. So I didn't really have this. I was just kind of like, whoa, this is like wild or whatever. And I'm like watching it going upside down, but I didn't feel like it was going to be a huge problem. And like, as you can see in the clip, it kind of really didn't. My feet came all the way back around by the time I got to the snowpack, basically, and I was fine. So, but it was, I do distinctly remember that visual of watching the cliff like face like zipping by me while I was upside down. So
fuck, dude, that's crazy.
Yeah.
How?
No, that's a good one.
Yeah. I was like, and it kind of just like came through, like, you know, YouTube does that, like push through, they push you more shit and more shit and more shit. Mm-hmm. And like, just came through, and I like had totally forgot about it. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, cause in the video, like TGR does a great job always of like making you want to click on the video, because in the video you're like upside down in the little clip for it. But Yeah. How do you think your skiing has changed since then? Like, how long ago was that?
Geez, that was all the way back to 2011 now.
Right. Yeah. It was like
quite a few years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that, I mean, I still want to find stuff like that. You know, I think like one of the ways I've been able to kind of define myself a little bit is sort of skiing stuff that other people won't. And I want to like kind of maintain that, because to some degree, it's some of that stuff catches my eye. It's not something I really like want to force, but I'm also like, I mean, that's a really cool piece of mountain and cool feature. So it's like, yeah, someone should ski that, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, there's also equipment's changing and stuff a little bit, you know, I mean, I do have in my current quiver something super similar, and that's been making me think more about that. Cause like the skis I was using at that time are very similar to like the Declivity X, which is something I ski on now, like pretty flat tail, like trustworthy to stomp something that's like critical, you know, that kind of thing. But then, I don't know, maybe in that era, of course, too, you're coming in hot, just like trying to prove yourself as well, right? And so once you've done a handful of those things, maybe that desire doesn't hit as hard. But yeah, I don't know. I try to, you know, even in that scenario, I wouldn't say like I'm trying to do that for someone else. It was still something that I wanted to do personally. And so still looking for features in that way, like what interests me, you know? Yeah, a lot of it really, that's what keeps me motivated. A lot of that hasn't really changed that much. Whether or not I'm getting some of that footage from year to year, I think is more dictated by like what trips I end up on, or like what crew I can get in, whether it's like a good TGR trip or not, and that kind of thing, and less by like what I'm personally changing in my skiing, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I hope that I've grown like a bit more versatile, you know, and can take advantage of many different kinds of trips now, you know. But
how
I don't know,
how do you feel physically? Like, I mean, we're talking about like the last line we just talked about was almost 10 years ago now. Like, you're not like 10 years takes a toll on the body. Like, how do you feel physically? Like, do you feel like you've been I mean, how long have you been a professional skier now?
Well, I was thinking, so the first year I shot with TGR was 2008, so I guess that makes 13 years is a good way to put it.
It's a lot of beating your body up, dude.
Yeah, it is. No, but you know, that's also one of the things that I've learned, and I think can be good lessons for like other people who want to have some longevity, is that it doesn't mean you should tone down how aggressive you're skiing. It's more about like picking the right days, you know, because you can't, you know, there's especially like younger kids who are hungry, trying to make them a name for themselves in ski and resort really hard all the time. I mean, that's going to be way harder on your body than,
yeah,
you know, spending the time to get deep, fine, good snow, do this stuff when the conditions are right, you know? So I think, and I've also learned that, you know, even a small ding can really mess with your season. So like, if you get just terrible shin bang or like, you know, whatever it may be, that it's not really going to like stop your season, but it's also going to affect what you choose and your confidence, and, or maybe slow you down for like a month of the season, which can be a lot. So I always keep my, you know, hoping that my body is feeling good. Like, that's a really, really high priority for me, you know? That doesn't mean, you know, if you're not, you're going to eat it and you're going to take some hits if you're pushing yourself. So there's a balance for sure. But, I think for sure part of it is what we talked about earlier, which is making sure you're doing the prep when you're not skiing, you know?
Right.
It's important to just be in shape for those reasons, so you can take a hit. Then choosing the right days, and also, like we touched on a little bit earlier, trusting your gut. Like, don't just blast through that. If something really doesn't feel right someday, like, it's probably not going to go right. So like, just kind of trying to create a system of like using all those elements, you know, and if you can stay like pretty healthy through a whole season, then that's a huge success in and of itself, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that doesn't get talked about enough in skiing, especially from professionals. Like, now I think because everybody kind of has like an Instagram persona. They're putting that stuff out there just for content in the summer. But right. I don't think right. the workouts and the work that goes in kind of behind ski, like aside from skiing, gets talked about mm-hmm. enough like it does with every other like professional athlete in the world.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know. I think part of that's like, you know, skiing is a unique spot because we do have these people who are really successful that are pushing themselves as like traditional athletes, you know, with coaches and
right.
trainers and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, obviously in ski racing, but even now what's happened with slopestyle and half pipe and things like that. But then on the other hand, we are still this like counterculture thing where it's like, we want to be like lifestyle vagabond, you know, doing our own thing. So there's like a little bit of a balance in what that looks like. Because I think that there's, you could look at someone who is like extremely fit doing this stuff constantly. And you're kind of looking at that, you're like, well, you know, I'm not like, that's not like why I'm a skier, you know, I'm a skier because I right. like, want to spend time outside and like ski powder and both, you know? So I agree with what you're saying. It's important, I think, for people who are interested in becoming like the best skier that they can be to know that those elements for sure should be part of their program. But on the other hand, like skiing's unique in that it is a lifestyle sport. It's very similar to like surfing or something in that way. Right. You know?
Yeah. So, I guess the activity itself, I mean, and by no means am I saying like skiing is less important than going to the gym. Like I do right. definitely think, I just think that they go hand in hand. And a lot of times that part gets forgotten when, especially when it comes to like longevity in sport. Right.
For sure.
Yeah. So you've been with Armada for a long time now, mm-hmm. and why? Can I just like, and I like Armada, like I like Armada a lot. Yeah. It's just like, they're a slightly smaller brand, I guess. They're part of Ammer. Why mm-hmm. have you decided to keep going with them?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I just think they're a sick brand. I mean, first off, same. Like I've always been kind of attracted to that element of it. And when I kind of got the opportunity to work with them, I was like really psyched because that was like around the time they were moving from Costa Mesa, California to Park City.
Yep.
And I was excited about that because, I mean, I love like gear. Like that's a huge part of it for me still as well. And with the brands I'd worked with prior, I didn't, you know, of course I had some input and, but especially with the big European brands, it's like, I'd know a couple of guys and maybe I'd see him at the ski show and we'd exchange emails, but it felt like this very distant thing. Whereas with Armada, it's like so cool for me. I get to go in the office and I literally know everybody in there. You know, I'm like good friends with the designer. I get to test, you know, all the skis, like stuff that I'm not even necessarily going to have in my immediate quiver. But like, it's just really hands-on there. And I love that about it. And, but yeah, like I said, I think there's still, it's what they represent within the sport is something I really align with. Mm. You know, I think they just, they still have, I mean, I hope that they continue to grow, you know, like the declivity series and stuff and they, in their fam, we can grow our family and bring more people into what we're doing, you know, but it's still just the concept of, you know, the, them bringing creativity to skiing and stuff and being something different is something I really appreciate about it, I think.
Yeah, that declivity series and even Tracer, I think for me was kind of switched in my head from like, oh, Armada's like ARV, AR7, mm-hmm. JJ was like all they made in my head to like mm-hmm. now they're like a legitimate full line brand. Like they have stuff with demo bindings on it. Like they, you know, there's
totally
they're a legit all mountain brand.
And you know, the other thing that is really cool for me personally is that like a lot of my friends who ski with other brands, I mean, they may like, they basically like choose one pair of skis and they ski on it like full time. Right now I have, you know, especially in the POW ski realm, like I have so many different pairs of skis I use. And I make that decision just on like, cause I think it's fun to ride on something different, you know, like, so for me, like, it's like, I have ARGs I ski on a ton, which I think would surprise a lot of people just because like I have this more like big mountain and like racing background and all that. But like that's probably my favorite pair of skis if I had to pick one. you know, and then we got the Clivity X's, which is fits in that, like I said, something that I can just trust for like landing gear and like consequential stuff. Then Tracer 118 has been a go-to forever of mine. I've been using the White Walkers quite a bit now. And those, it's been fun for me to see. Those are, seem to be doing pretty well. And I skied, you know, I was with Sammy a bunch last season when he was kind of getting hyped and finishing that thing up. We got Magic Jays. I mean, so there's even more, but like just right there, that's five pairs of skis that I love to have in my quiver, you know, versus a lot of my peers who literally are skiing on the same pair of skis every day, you know?
Yeah, no, that makes a huge difference. And all, like, on that same note, like, what a fucking team of people, like, to have.
Yeah, no, and that's another thing, too, is that, again, like, it's just fun for me. I mean, I think it's the most legendary ski team that's ever been assembled, you know? And so to be a part of that feels, like, special to me for sure, you know?
Yeah, and I don't really have much argument with you. I mean, there was definitely a time, I think, when that there was like that K2 team that kind of had everybody when it was like Seb and Pettit and like a whole bunch of people. But I think so, like, this rivals that in every way, you know, it's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great mix you know, and I think that's another reason I have a good home there is that like, I mean, we have Toff and like Ian, it's a couple other guys. They're more like directional like myself, but
fuck,
like,
I forgot about him too.
You know, it's like, I still feel like I have a special home there because I don't really ski the same as Tanner. I don't ski the same as Sammy, you know?
Right.
But certainly not the same as, like, Phil and Henrik. And
yeah, that's so ridiculous. That's,
you know what I mean? So to bring these other elements to the team, you know, it feels like a good niche there as well, you know?
Yeah. Is there anything in particular that you're looking forward to for your season? Like, do you do that? Do you set, like... Do you set a specific goal for a year anymore? Or are you just like, let's see what happens and kind of go from there? I mean, obviously, like we talked a little bit about it changing because of COVID, but I more mean in general.
Yeah. I don't know. One of the things I've been thinking about more is that I kind of have this like running tick list of stuff in my head that like kind of like the line that got away, like on all these different zones I've been to. So I would love to hopefully get back to shoot in some of the places I've been and like revisit some of it. But I was almost kind of trying to think of different ways to make that even like more high priority. But again, I don't know that it's like the right time to tackle all of that specifically just with the potential restrictions. But yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, again, I think I'd mentioned, you know, hopefully shooting with TGR, love to get a part with them. And best case scenario, maybe that can happen. Like in Alaska would be great for me, but
it's kind of funny to hear you say that, like, you're going back to lines that you wish you could have skied a different way. Like, is that kind of what you're saying? Like,
some of it is that as well, but no, it's like kind of things I saw because the way my brain works with this stuff a lot is, sometimes I love, you know, it's really fun to like ski something like the day you see it, like the first time you've ever seen this great thing and you get on it and ski it. But I also like a lot of times I'll see something or I'll see something in the distance or whatever. And then it's kind of like that seed gets sort of planted in my head. And then all of a sudden it's kind of this growing thing. So, no, I mean, honestly, it's like just think, you know, it's hard in any given season to keep getting back to some of these areas you've previously visited. But I mean, I have like stuff in my head from a decade ago plus of like, oh man, I really wanted to ski that, you know, but I didn't get a chance that trip or whatever. So just trying to make sure to get some of those ideas. I continue to check out ideas. I mean, that's still, again, that's a big motivating factor for me after having been in this for a while. It's just like continuing to do things for myself in there as well, which is I think related to that, and often that would, I hope that overlaps with a good shot, you know.
Does, and that kind of leads into another thing here, do you get bored of this at all? Like, do you get kind of tired of the same old, I mean, obviously it's different, conditions are different and skiing's kind of always changing, but do you get sick of the whole like the actual work of being a professional skier, right? Meaning like dealing with sponsors and like sending stuff in and like having the post on social and like your obligations, I guess, as instead of just like skiing. Does that give you any kind of feeling of burnout at all?
Yeah, I mean, maybe slightly. I think social, obviously, I'm sure that's come up in a lot of conversations, of course.
Oh, a million times. It's
an interesting one for me because, I mean, on one hand, I'm really thankful to have this platform to like put stuff out that I think is cool. But like you said, on the other hand, when it feels like sort of something that needs to be paid attention to, that's a little bit of can be a bummer. But I think it's still me managing my attitude about, which is, again, like this is something, this is a tool I have, you know. Grateful that that exists now, you know, because before you'd always be, the beginning of my career, I'd be relying on someone else to do some of that. So to be able to have some of that in your own hands, I think is this great benefit. But I think it's, you know, as you've seen, there's a lot of athletes that probably spend more time working on that than whether that is actually skiing or trying to get actually good photos or, film shots or whatever it may be, you know, because I think it could be maybe a slight distraction, you know, sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, for but, sure. I mean, how can't it be? Like, there's so much going on always. Like, it's so addicting.
Mm-hmm. But I also think that it still has a different value too, right? Like,
for sure.
I mean, I'm looking at those things and actually I'm stoked when like my friends put out like stuff that's super fun to watch or look at, but the things I really remember are still more like that epic video part or, you know, that sick shot in the mag or those other things seem to have a lot more lasting value to me, you know?
Yeah. So on like in For Good Measure, which is the most recent thing you put out, and then I guess there's something else coming out that we'll talk about in a minute here, but what was it intentional? Like the format of it was very like almost like old school feeling. Like it was just like rock music and skiing huge lines like that. Mm-hmm. Like it was as simple as it possibly could be. There was no filler shit. There was nothing. It was basically like just that. Was that intentional?
Yes and no. Like, I mean, I still kind of like that sort of thing. So I'm like, want to be the person that's least contributing that a little bit. But also it was like that trip that footage was from wasn't really for a project. So there wasn't like, we weren't really, I don't think working on, you know, collecting the B-roll or like making a big story or anything. It was more just like this strike mission and just, we just shot skiing and that's kind of like a little bit what we had. So I know that's something that, you know, I don't think I've ever really quite figured out exactly. Cause I think we're in this era where, well, I don't really know exactly what people want to watch. Cause there has been a push for like more story based, like narrated type things, you know, and I've seen that done really well, but, I always just want to be like, I hope that I'm like contributing stuff that I also would think is cool if it wasn't me putting it out, if that makes any sense. I don't know.
No, it does. It makes so, total sense. And honestly, like the first time I watched this, whenever it came out, like a couple months ago or a few weeks ago, whatever it was, I was super happy that it was the way it was. Like, it was just like, it's just like 5-6 minutes of just like bangers, and that's what it is. Like, not every, because I feel like every piece, to your point, that comes out now is storytelling. And at a certain point, the audience is kind of like, we just want to see, and maybe that's me. Like, maybe that's like the watching old, you know, old videos kind of thing in me, but I really enjoyed it, and I think a lot of people did. Like, and if people haven't seen it, go watch it. Like, it's sick. It's exactly that. It's like, if you're just looking for a skiing fix, it's a skiing fix, and it's awesome.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah. I don't know. I think, again, you know, I think what was inspiring me initially was watching some of that more traditional format, but I've also just, you know, grew up watching, like, MTV. I'm, like, that age now, too. Where, like, I was watching music videos as a kid and stuff, and I, like, I still really like a lot of videos like that, you know? So,
yeah. So what's the project coming up? When is it coming up and what is it?
Well, so it's a bunch of TGR footage that wasn't used. and it's not really a big mountain piece like the one you've been talking about for Good Measure. It's don't really have a title yet, so I don't know what it's called, but it's more actually just like really trenching. Like most of it was shot during like a huge February cycle, and we'll see. I kind of gave it to, you know, to Brady. I had some ideas of how I wanted it to go, but I also, well, usually I've been really hands-on with that kind of thing, and I kind of wanted to see what his interpretation of it was. So he's kind of currently working on it, and I'm excited to see what he's done, and then I imagine, you know, we'll probably tweak some more and come to a but I kind of left him a fairly open-ended time frame as well, so I thought maybe seeing it like right about now, like really January, but I don't know, maybe hopefully in the next
this is his
something.
Push this is his push right here.
Mm-hmm. So
do you normally like to be super hands-on? I guess people don't really even think about that, because I never even really thought about that aspect of like how you want yourself to be perceived when someone else is edited. Like to me, and I'm assuming to other people too, you see something that somebody filmed and you're like, okay, that's what they filmed that day. You don't think about like the creatives that go into it.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to be as hands-on as I can. I mean, as far as like the stuff I've had in the movies, I've had not very much input with, but like everything that you've seen online, I basically was making to some degree, but I'm not a really great editor. So I ultimately always need some help. And then it becomes a little bit more of a collaboration at that point. Mm. Which, you know, I've always had goals of maybe becoming slightly better at it, but I'm also, I think I can waffle on decisions a little bit for a while. Cause I mean, a lot of his footage, like will watch way different. I mean, you get, depending on which track you pick and all that. So
right.
At some point you got to kind of just like choose something and run with it. And I think that's what's other people helping me has been really helpful with, you know, just to kind of get you over those sticking points. So, but of course, I want to be involved. And I think a lot of people, speaking of like other people on the Armada team, I mean, almost every one of those guys is making their own stuff, you know? So you know, Sammy sits down again, they're not all editors. Some of them can edit pretty well, but Sammy sits down and watches those projects to the fruition. And, you know, Phil, when he's making that, you know, he's collaborating with Brady, of course, but he has a vision that he's trying to execute. And, they're all pretty hands-on, I would say. And I don't know if that's super typical, but I think some people want to be more hands-on than others, you know?
Yeah, no, and it makes sense because it is how you're being portrayed to the audience, you know, whatever that audience is intended to be, whether it's for an Instagram clip or for, you know, a full-length actual ski movie.
So, totally, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, dude, thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
You bet.
So I don't know what the timing's going to look like on this, and I don't know what the timing's going to look like on what you have coming out, but I would love to promote it around the same time too.
That would be awesome.
If it does work out, you know?
Yeah. One other thing that I want to just add, cause I'm kind of excited about it at the moment as well, is, I just signed with Scott.
Oh shit.
As well, which is new for me. And, so yeah.
How'd that come up?
Well, it was sort of, I've been talking to them for a while, but it was just a matter of, I think like any of this stuff, you know, when there's kind of an opening budget wise. And, so I'm really excited just because I think they have, you know, their Abbey packs. I don't know if you know much about what they're doing there with they have the, battery ones.
Yeah.
So solves a lot of problems like flying and stuff, but they're kind of like the lightest, newest, best in that category, which I'm really excited about. But yeah, it just barely started like a month ago, but we haven't really done anything with it for the holidays. So anyways, it might be good timing when this thing pops out. So.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'd love to get this thing out in the next week or so, something like that. Yeah. So we'll see how it works out. But yeah, that's an awesome pickup for you. So what are the brands you're working with look like now?
Well, Armada, of course, like we talked about, and, that's for outerwear and skis as well. So, Sierra Nevada, which has been an awesome partner for sure. Good fit, obviously, beer and ski culture. And now Scott, and I have this small fork company out of Denver called Tenderbelly.
Oh, sick. Sending
bacon.
No shit.
Yeah, that's a really fun one as well.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. Dude, thank you again for the time. This has been great.
Yeah, man. Pleasure talking to you.
That was episode number 136 with Todd Laguerre. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I know I did. Once again, thank you to him for coming on the show. And thank you to Fisher Skies for sponsoring this episode of the podcast and the show in general. Please leave a review on iTunes if you get the opportunity. And we will talk to you on Thursday with Megan Wake or Chegg Wake.